Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests today are the poets Ellen McGrath Smith and Jill Corey. Ellen McGrath Smith teaches literature and writing at the University of Pittsburgh and in Carlo University's Mad Women in the Attic program for women writers. Her critical work has appeared in the Denver Quarterly, American Book Review, and Pittsburgh Quarterly. Smith's poems have appeared or are forthcoming in Cerise, Weave, The Same, The Best of the Prose Poem, Southern Poetry Review, Pittsburgh Quarterly, and others. Smith is also the review's editor for Sentence, a journal of prose poetics. She has dealt with neurological hearing impairment since childhood, and the reason we're saying that is because Smith is here to talk about the anthology Beauty is a Verb, The New Poetry of Disability, an anthology edited by Jennifer Bartlett, Sheila Black, and Michael Northen. Hi, Ellen. How are you?
I'm good, Jan. How are you?
I'm great. It's really great to have you. And this anthology that you're talking about is wonderful. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about it, Beauty is a Verb?
Sure. It was published fall of 2011 by Cinco Puntos Press in El Paso, Texas. It's been getting great reviews all over the country and from all kinds of different directions. For example, Charles Bernstein's blog, Ron Silliman's blog, Publishers Weekly was on the Poetry Magazine top 10 most notable anthology last year. And so it obviously is filling a need. The editors decided to go forward with the anthology after doing a panel at the Association of Writers and Writing Programs convention in December 2009. The anthology's range is unprecedented, and one of its striking features is that it brings together voices from a whole bunch of poetic camps. It includes work by established writers who have not previously or elsewhere identified as disabled. Each selection of the poems by an author comes along with a short essay, reflection on the ways in which disability or the body plays into their poetic practice. For authors from the past who are now gone, essays are by individuals who have closely studied their life and work. So the anthology has an introduction by one of the editors, Michael Northen, which reviews the history of disability literature in the U.S. And the anthology follows that history loosely, at least at first. In the first section, Early Voices, there's work by poets who are now deceased, Larry Eigner, Tom Andrews, Robert Fagan, Vassar Miller, and Josephine Miles. That these poets did not, in their time, they didn't necessarily identify as disabled. Many were writing at a time when you downplayed your disabilities for fear of discrimination. Josephine Miles, for instance, was born in 1911. She was the first woman on the UC Berkeley faculty to receive tenure. Though she dealt all her life with rheumatoid arthritis and managed to do her job in a really inaccessible landscape, there are stories of her having to be carried up the steps to her office, for example. She made very little of the barriers that made her job more difficult to do. At that time, there were two roles for the person with a disability, either the superhero who overcame all obstacles, like Franklin Roosevelt, or media portrayals of Helen Keller, or the pathetic, tragic figure. Miles and others like her wanted to inhabit some part of the spectrum in between those two extremes, which is simply to be a human being, developing her abilities and living independently. She was a great poet of voice. She listened a good deal to the way people put things and different dialects. And the short poem I want to read of Miles is called Reason. And the scenario here is a couple of cars outside of a movie theater. Said, pull her up a bit, will you, Mac? I want to unload there. Said, pull her up my rear end, first come, first served. Said, give her the gun, bud. He needs a taste of his own bumper. Then the usher came out and got into the act. Said, pull her up a bit. We need this space, sir. Said, for God's sake, is this still a free country or what? You go back and take care of Gary Cooper's horse and leave me handle my own car. Saw them unloading the lame old lady. ducked out under the wheel and gave her an elbow. Said, all you needed to do was explain. Reason. Reason is my middle name.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests today are the poets Ellen McGrath Smith and Joe Corey. They're reading from the anthology Beauty is a Verb, The New Poetry of Disability. You know, I think it's great that there's such a range of poetic aesthetic in the anthology. You know, in the introduction, in the preface, Jennifer Bartlett talks about not including some things like poets writing about HIV, AIDS, or cancer, and not wanting to cross the line into illness. And she also said that they did not include alcoholism, and that most poets could be looked at through a disability lens. So I guess I'm wondering, and Ellen, you have some poems in the anthology also. Mm-hmm. And I hope that you're going to read one of those poems. And you're shaking your head. No, no one can see that. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'll talk you into it. But can you talk about the anthology in your own words as what you think it means as a publication? I mean, it seems like a really long overdue thing, and yet it seems like a really progressive thing at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I think that what it does on the large scale is that it's an alert to all of us, as Jennifer said in her preface, that disabled isn't a category that relegates people to this place where they're sequestered from the general population. Disability is something that is always a potential for everybody. And I think that, you know, we've had a decade of wars, for example, and we're going to see a lot more visible disabilities in everyday life, not to mention the psychic disabilities of PTSD, depression, anxiety from these wars. And so I think what makes it really important is it's a diversity issue. It's a way of us to begin to think about what we do to others when we look at them and decide that they are not us. What kind of projection is that, and what kind of fears motivate that kind of projection? Jennifer Bartlett puts it really well in one of her poems in the anthology from her long work, Autobiographies, where she talks about and she uses the word crippled, and she uses it as a way of kind of reclaiming it. But to be crippled is to be a window into able-bodied people's fears. And also it's further down in the same series of poems, she talks about how the disabled body is a window into everyone's eroding. You know, the fact that we are all mortal, the fact that our bodies do not hold up, that they're subject to all kinds of illnesses and pathologies, that projection comes out of that fear and the resistance to that. And I think it's important for all of us to learn that. I think it's important for all of us to learn what other people's experiences are like. I can tell people what it's like for me not to be able to hear and yet not to be deaf. You know, mm-hmm. if people have a hard time understanding, for example, that my hearing impairment isn't really about volume, it's about frequency, and it isn't readily and immediately fixed by hearing aids. It's helped in some ways. And so when I am able to write from that experience, then it makes other people more aware of the best way to interact. I think a lot of people are nervous, and I don't exclude myself. They're nervous when interacting with people with disabilities because they want to do the best thing, but they don't know how.
Right.
And there's no better way to give somebody access to subjective experience than poetry. That's just a given, right? There's no better way to do that. So,
well, for us, yeah, and hopefully for a lot of people.
I mean, I can't imagine there is. I mean, because it really does come out of the internal world interfacing with the external world, and So we all stand to learn a lot, but there's also some beautiful art here that comes out of that experience too.
Okay. I mean, it seems like part of what you're saying is is the continuum of disability, and that seems like it's also reflected in the anthology with, you know, the idea of celebrating that there is some narrative, for example, celebrating the non-normative body, and there's some poetry resisting any kind of labeling whatsoever, and there's, you know, a lot of difference within the anthology. Would you say that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's no standard line that people follow, which Sheila Black, one of the editors, she's in the third section of this anthology, which focuses on lyric or narrative approaches. She had vitamin D resistant rickets as a child. And in the poem I'd like to read, she writes movingly of the sense of loss she as a child experienced, not because of her condition, but because of all the interventions, especially the surgeries and the therapies directed at straightening her legs because her legs were bowed. So I'd like to read that if I could.
Great, yeah.
It's called What You Mourn. The year they straightened my legs, the young doctor said, meaning to be kind, "Now you will walk straight on your wedding day." But what he could not imagine is how, even on my wedding day, I would arch back and wonder about the body I had before I was changed, how I would have nested in it, made it my home, how I repeated his words when I wished to stir up my native anger, feel like the exile I believed I was, imprisoned in a foreign body, like a person imprisoned in a foreign land, forced to speak a strange tongue, heavy in the mouth, a mouthful of stones. Crippled, they called us when I was young. Later, the word was disabled, and then differently abled. But those were all names given by outsiders, none of whom could imagine that the crooked body they spoke of, the body which made walking difficult and running practically impossible, except as a kind of dance, a sideways looping, like someone about to fall headlong down and hug the earth. That body they tried so hard to fix, straighten, was simply mine. And I loved it as you love your own country, the familiar lay of the land, the unkempt trees, the smell of mowed grass, down to the nameless flowers at your feet, clover, asphodel, and the blue flies that buzz over them.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests today are the poets Ellen McGrath-Smith and Jill Corey, and they're reading from the anthology Beauty is a Verb, The New Poetry of Disability. My next guest is the poet Jill Corey. Jill Corey earned her Master of Fine Arts from The Ohio State University. She teaches in the Young Writers Institute, a year-round enrichment program sponsored by the Western Pennsylvania Writing Project. Her poems have appeared or are forthcoming in numerous journals, including Sentence, Word Gathering, and Harper Palette. She has been nominated for the Pushcart Prize twice by Breath and Shadow, a journal of disability, culture, and literature, and has a chapbook entitled Borrowed Bodies from Pudding House Press. Hi, Jill. How are you?
I'm doing well today, Jan.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming. And you, along with Ellen Smith, are talking about the anthology Beauty is a Verb, The New Poetry of Disability, and you had a poem that you were going to read from there.
Yeah, the first poem, I guess, that I would like to read from the anthology is by Jim Ferris, and it's called Lost Hyoid. Lost Hyoid. 200 bones in the human body. They wait for me to die so they can tell their stories uninterrupted. I wait for different reasons. Surround each bone with my ignorance. Phalanges, metacarpals, spongy hollows in surprising places. It's the joints that give the trouble, the twist, the shout, worn away, worn out, sighed in. I knew a woman lovely in her bones. I jousted with the emperor of bones. He always wins. Talus, fibula, tibia. Calcium and phosphorus are his elements, and time weeps for no hand. Radius, ulna, humerus, insert joke here. The smallest bone is the stapes, the stirrup which rides across your ear, here? But the lost hyoid connects. Roll this over your tongue, to no other bone. So I really think this poem, it's important to me because living in a body with a disability can feel like a disconnected life. And so in this poem, you hear the speaker very connected to his own body, but also you hear the loss, the poor lost hyoid. It's not connected to any other bones. And I looked this up on Wikipedia, and it is quite true. It's distantly connected only. And so I fantasize that there is this experience, an experience of non-disabled people, a common experience that I'm excluded from or tethered to only in sort of a remote way. For example, to ride a bike, drive a car, walk a straight line. These are things that many people do without thinking about it. And yet when I'm out in the larger world, I have to choreograph my movements very carefully, walking, buses, and so forth, to keep from running into other people or falling down. And sometimes I perceive my body's difference as failure. So this line here, I jousted with the emperor of bones, he always wins. It really gets me, because I feel like I'm doing a lot of jousting as well. Especially, so my parents mainstreamed me instead of, you know, you could have a choice, special school or mainstreaming, and they mainstreamed me. And they really stuck this into my head from a young age, this philosophy of you can do anything just as good as anyone else. And I guess they thought that that's going to be inspirational to her, that's going to build her self-esteem, but it's just, it's not true. And I'm learning now that it's okay that it's not true. But then, you know, I'm a small child. And so I failed and failed again at being normal. So this anthology, Beauty as a Verb, it does two things for me, basically. First, on a broader level, it just collects this whole bunch of these different disability experiences, and it gives us a cultural artifact, a really solid artifact. And secondly, personally, when I discovered this anthology, I really felt I'm being thrown a lifeline. I can talk more about that later if you want.
Mm-hmm. Let me interrupt you just a second. I mean, I like what you're saying about the artifact and the cultural lifeline. And also, I wanted to ask you about something that shows up in the anthology, which is, you know, disagreement and different positions, which is great, and that the is there any kind of concern about disability poetry, you know, ghettoizing poetry, as in a lot of gay writers talking about, if you call it gay poetry, it'll be in this section of the bookstore, no one will ever see it, et cetera, et cetera. What is your feeling about the label of disability on the poetry?
It's an excellent question, simply because there's really no single answer. I think that it's a valid concern. People that I've talked to, you know, they get fearful. Kind of like Ellen said, they get fearful. Especially with disability, you're looking at bodies that don't work. As, you know, they aren't normal. I shouldn't say don't work. They work differently. They're not normalized. And so, you know, oh, no one's ever going to read this. It's about disability. I don't have a disability, so I'm not going to pick up this. But on the other hand, I mean, if we don't start claiming an identity, you know, when's it going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's actually, I was asked by someone very close to me, how do you see yourself? Do you see yourself within this class of disabled people? Do you feel comfortable representing a class of disabled people? And I had to say, well, I can only represent my own experience, but you know what? I'm willing to stand up for it. Gosh, how our language is cluttered with metaphors.
Yeah. Okay, do you have another poem that you were going to read from?
I do.
Yeah.
The second poem is, it's Dan Simpson's School for the Blind. And I don't think I mentioned this in my bio, but I have a congenital visual impairment. Also, much like Ellen, I can't see, but I'm not blind. So here's this poem, School for the Blind. Chair, bed, dresser. New world, scaled down, small as the cream-soft palms of the four-year-old left tonight at the boarding school in an open dorm. Aisle nearest the lockers, second bed down, suitcase from home, touch bedspread, his hands pried from his mother's skirt. "Best thing," she said, "Braille and new playmates, still home for the weekends." Then they drove off. Kathy and Connie got to watch Lassie. Down he lies, but tomorrow morning, his shoelaces tied, he will decide to make new friends, learn every language, study the birds to know how to sing, read every book, plot his escape, and fly from the playground on airplane's wings.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests today are the poets Ellen McGrath-Smith and Jill Corey, and they're both reading from the anthology Beauty is a Verb, the New Poetry of Disability. Jill, you had a poem of your own that you were going to read. Do you have that right there?
I do have it here, Jan.
If you have a few words to say about it, but would like to hear that poem, make sure we have that in.
Okay. I guess this poem, it's really... When I studied at Ohio State, I was into disability studies, and I came back to Pittsburgh, and the transition was very hard. I put away the white cane, I fell down a lot, I ran into a lot of people, and so when someone told me about this anthology, it, like I said, it really was a lifeline, and it helped me be proud again, you know? And so this is one of my poems from this experience, being able to be proud again. It's called Saltation with Cane, saltation being a kind of leaping dance. Saltation with Cane, for Priyasha. When I hold her, she points to the ways I am different from her mommy, fingers my pink hair, nose ring, while her mother murmurs, gentle. I let her hands explore my face, even drift into my mouth. I say ma, ma, ma. She points to my chipped black toenail polish, traces the lines of my tattoos. When we have walked along Carson to the car, she wants to touch a brick wall I would have found interesting, snapped a picture of its mottled texture. But I'm loaded down with bags and cane. The cane takes one hand. Her mommy says, brick. She says, brick. Now she wants down, she wants to walk toward me and my cane. She asks, what is it? I say, white cane. She runs her palm up the side like me when I first felt the smoothness of this new cane, fiberglass, telescoping. Now she wants to walk with it, so we do, at first awkwardly and then spinning around it like a maypole. I hold up high and she holds low. She is joyous. I am circumscribed. I try to keep the tip solid on the sidewalk so she won't slip. Her feet follow me or their own rhythm. She doesn't sense my awkward tilt. I try my best to be the spinning wheel of the gyroscope. I chant, spin, spin. I don't care who sees us.
Thank you. Nice poem.
Thanks.
During different points when I was listening, I kept thinking, I haven't heard a poem like this. And I also had that feeling when I was reading a lot of poems in the anthology, and it's like it's like new air coming in. And as a reader, a really good feeling. So thank you for reading that. Okay, back to Ellen McGrath-Smith. Ellen, I wanted to ask you about the reading. There's a reading coming up for Beauty is a Verb in Pittsburgh. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. On Thursday, September 13th, at the University of Pittsburgh, we will be bringing in three readers from the anthology. Two of them are editors, Jennifer Bartlett and Michael Northen. And the third reader is Kathy Wolf from Washington, D.C. They will be reading at 8:30 in the O'Hara Student Center Auditorium, which is on O'Hara Street, right next to Soldiers and Sailors. The event's accessible. There will be ASL interpreter and real-time captioning, and there'll be a reception afterwards. People will be able to purchase the book. The next day, again open to the public, 10 a.m. to noon, at the Pitt Humanities Center in 602 Cathedral, we'll be having a roundtable on disability and disability studies in the humanities. What we're trying to do here is bring together academics, students, activists, and the poets. Some of the poets who will be reading on Thursday will be there too, just to weigh in on the issues that people with disabilities face within the academy on a day-to-day basis, but also a larger question of how some of the disability theory can be used and across disciplines in serious academic work. And we're trying to get a conversation started there. And so that's 10 until noon at the Pitt Humanities Center. We're really excited about this. It's made possible by Pitt's English Department, the Pittsburgh Contemporary Writers Series, the Pitt Office of Disability Resources and Services, and the Pitt Humanities Center. It's open to everybody. We really want to make this a chance for people in the Pittsburgh community to come out and celebrate this anthology and make connections.
Mm-hmm. So it's free and open to the public?
Absolutely.
And the reading is September 13th, 8:30 p.m.?
Yes.
It's a Thursday evening. And where is it again?
O'Hara Student Center, which mm-hmm. is actually the former Concordia Club. It's a kind of new Pitt building that Pitt has taken over right next to Soldiers and Sailors on O'Hara Street. And for people using access, there is a lot next to the O'Hara Student Center where they can be dropped off.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much, Ellen and Jill, for being here. You've been listening to the poetry and discussion by Ellen McGrath-Smith and Jill Corey of Beauty is a Verb, the new poetry of disability. You've been listening to Prosody, our weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.